Deep Dive Cleantech. Dein Business-, Investment- und Technologietauchgang zum grüneren Wirtschaften von DWR Eco. Deinem Moderator David Wortmann. Ab geht's.
My guest today is Frederik Bishop. Frederik, hopefully I have pronounced your name. I think some of the listeners may already guess this is a Dutch name.
It's a very Dutch name. It's even for Dutch, it's a difficult name because they usually call me Freek, but it's really Freek.
Freek, okay. Yeah. Well, this is, I'm very much looking forward to for this discussion we are having, because I think you are probably our gateway into the Dutch ecosystem around clean tech, green tech, climate tech.
I hope so.
You have been involved in these topics for so many years. So maybe let's start with you for a second. Because you know the Dutch ecosystem, we want to get to know it through your eyes today. So give us a quick rundown of how long you have been involved in these topics.
Okay, well, that's quite challenging because I started out very early, around the 1990s, got involved in a PhD in solar photovoltaic material science as a physics student. So that's when I fell in love with the problem of solving the energy transition. And I never left the topic. At the same time, I could say, well, I had hoped by now that the problem would have been fully solved, which is not yet the case. So throughout my working life, I've been working in many different positions and roles, always connected to at the core to energy transition, initially at the utilities in the Netherlands, then as an entrepreneur setting up my own energy company that is now part of a company called Green Choice, one of the leading green energy suppliers in the Netherlands.
So what about this company doing?
They're retailing green electricity and services connected to that. I led an international consulting firm that operated out of Utrecht in the Netherlands that grew very fast in the first clean tech revolution, Ecofys. It did not fully survive as in one piece the credit crunch, to be honest. So I had my share of downsides to manage. But fortunately, many of the activities that we were involved in found their separate parts and can still be found back in different other companies and projects across Europe. Since 2012, I've been mostly involved in startup issues and helping startups, either by running an accelerator program at Rockstart, which I even build out to a hybrid accelerator and investment fund, regional investments in metropolitan Amsterdam projects where I live and operate from in CO2 reduction. I've been involved in advising, but also supervising several scale-ups and startups since. And the last couple of years, I've been active on actually two sides of the equation of the journey of startups. Mm-hmm. The later stage of scale-ups through being a venture partner in a Prague-based investment fund called Invent Capital. They may be familiar to many of the audience. And recently, 1.5 years ago, I started together with some others a venture building company here in the Netherlands called Deep Circle Ventures, which identifies opportunities in universities and research labs that could be the next solution.
Okay, so very early in the value chain. This sounds very impressive, and maybe let's touch a bit on what you guys do on Invent and Big Circle a little later in our conversation. I would love to start on your view around the Dutch ecosystem, how this has been evolving over the last couple of years. And maybe we can also later touch on your view on the European ecosystem. But let's start with the Dutch ecosystem. Is there any way to quantify it right now? How would you describe it? And in terms of, I don't know, numbers of companies, numbers of deals, numbers of exits. And of course, you won't have these numbers, but let's give us some idea so that we can better grab it.
Yeah. I don't have the statistics at heart, to be honest.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to have them.
And it's a moving target. There is an organization called TechLeap that is keeping track of this, so it's accessible. Mm-hmm. They've been doing great work over the last 5 years to map out this landscape and actually promote deep tech and tech innovations in general in a very good way. I would argue that the Dutch ecosystem has been very much dominated by software-based solutions. There are quite some big names in this field that have made waves in pure software solutions, payment solutions, for instance, like Adyen. But there's also a deep technical background that we have in the semiconductor industry the company ASML, which some of you might know. It's a company that builds actually the machines to make chips, processors with, and sells it over the whole world with the highest density. So they're really a very big company in the regio of Eindhoven that even are part of the political discussions around working with China, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there's a very strong technical ecosystem around that as well. And there are more pockets across the Netherlands in different fields. Traditionally, food tech is very strong from the Netherlands. So there's quite some, even some startup activities from that field. There's a very strong university in Delft, for instance, that has created many spin-offs and ventures in technology, also in clean tech technology. So one could summarize in saying, well, there is a thriving economy of existing established as well as early stage startup adventures in deep tech in broadly in software and specifically also some in clean tech.
Okay. So, and in terms of geography, is this, I mean, you mentioned Delft. I would assume probably Amsterdam plays a big role. I don't know, what about Maastricht and Rotterdam? And I don't know, is this more scattered around the Netherlands, evenly distributed, or would you say there are certain geographic areas?
Well, it's depending a little bit on the cross-section that you choose. Amsterdam is clearly a hub for startup activities and venture capital. So that's really one of the hotspots. It's definitely in the Netherlands, but also across Europe, I would think. But if you look, for instance, at the more technical solutions, the universities in Amsterdam are not very technically oriented, not very application oriented. That you find more on the technical universities in Delft, in Wageningen, in Twente, and in Eindhoven, which all have their specialties as well. So it's a bit fragmented. At the same time, the Netherlands are so small that travel distances are minimal, 1 hour from one place to the other. So there's quite some collaboration between these different hubs.
Okay. And of course, I mean, one could argue that, let's say, a ecosystem in the United States is probably not really depending on any outside, let's say, markets, gathering of people, skill set, etc. Even with Germany being slightly bigger than the Netherlands, maybe there's the argument saying, well, if you start with your startup, it's probably, I don't know, probably sufficient to rely on German resources, etc. Would you say this the same thing on the Netherlands as well?
Yeah.
That there are ways that you say, well, there is some sort of encapsulation around it, and then later on there will be some internationalization, or because of the size of your, let's say, ecosystem, your country, etc., and because of your history, because you have been very internationally throughout centuries, actually, this is not the case, and that you really automatically think European.
Well, you're touching a very important point that I think about regularly, have discussions about also, because what I've been seeing over decades now, is that early stage startup development in the Netherlands is totally fine. There's a rich ecosystem. There's proximity of informal investors, of institutional investors, incubators and accelerators, etc. So it's very nicely, it has very nicely grown over a decade or more in the Netherlands into be a very good place to start your business. And that's the case. So that's for
right.
Sure. There are some question marks though, when it comes to true scaling, because the Netherlands is too small as a market, as a home market, to scale your solutions. You can build them. You can start off with your initial market, maybe your beachhead or your trial market, and demonstrate your technologies. But it's not big enough to really carry a full scaling potential and provide for venture capital growth plans. So you need to go international. And in my view, many Dutch companies, startup companies, have been waiting too long to take that international perspective, because the Netherlands seem initially big enough for them, but it isn't. And when stepping into internationalization later in the process, it becomes a bit of a bottleneck, because you already have established quite some infrastructure in your company by itself, mm-hmm. in your culture, in your team, mm-hmm. that actually becomes then a little bit prohibitive. So I see a little bit of a barrier there in really expanding the services.
So is this like an extra barrier you would see in comparison to, let's say, startups coming out of France, Spain, Germany, or as we said, from the US, where you can rely a bit longer on your home market? Or could this be even a strength, because if you make it, you're just fitter and better to internationalize your business than some of the others we have just mentioned, because they just stuck too much to their own market?
Well, you definitely have a point there, but I think if we make a grander comparison, smaller countries than the Netherlands, like Estonia is an example, really built their solutions from the ground up for an international market and are mm-hmm. quite successful in that. Mm-hmm. Big countries like Germany and France build their solutions for their home markets, and they can become big, established, maybe even already profitable. And from there, invest properly in internationalization. And it's maybe equally difficult, but the investment to do can rely on a strong home base. In my view, in the Netherlands, we're between those two situations and getting the worst of those. So there's an initial growth, which doesn't bring you in the Netherlands to maturity. Mm-hmm. Then you need to start internationalizing your company, but your investors don't see the basis yet to afford for that. So that's where I think things get stuck a lot.
Okay. Obviously, the Netherlands is very well positioned within Europe. If it comes to the internationalization, usually, where would this be to? I mean, would this be, rather to the neighboring countries like, Belgium, Luxembourg, France, Germany, or whatever, it depends on the market probably. I don't know. Maybe it's your view on that.
No, but I think we can discuss it in general terms.
Yeah.
Expanding to Belgium is nice, but it doesn't change the whole picture, right? It's half the size of the Netherlands. So that's a 1.5x growth, uh-huh. which is not what uh-huh. we're looking for. So real growth internationally means tackling the larger markets across Europe, which uh-huh. are typically 5 to 10 times bigger than the Netherlands themselves. Germany, France, England. And then you see that those countries have a very strong ecosystem of their own, mm-hmm. of startups and ventures that one has to compete with. And there, I think this difficulty expands a little bit, because the solutions from the Netherlands are comparable to what has been growing or is growing in the bigger countries around us, and then cultural proximity, relationships, etc., tend to favor more of the local solutions. So it's I think it's quite hard for a Dutch company, a Dutch startup, if they don't start building some international presence from a very early stage.
Right. I mean, we just talked a bit about the difficulties for Dutch startups to grow. And but maybe you can, I don't know, maybe there are a few things where you say this really makes Dutch startups really special. I don't know if there's such a thing to just to, you know, boil it down to the nationality, of course. But it's is there something where you say, well, this is where, well, let's really watch out for the Dutch for the Dutch ecosystem, because you guys do something different than maybe some others do, maybe quite smartly as well.
Secret sauce. I think one of the secret ingredients that we do have is our tradition in being very international, as you indicated, and being quite active and smart in trade relations, etc. So in general, the Dutch move around easily. So they can pop up everywhere. That's one of the ingredients. So it gives us a versatile approach. We speak our languages. So we're used to working with other cultures and languages as well. So I think there's something of a secret, or not even a secret, something of a magic.
It's what everybody knows anyway. Yes. Very good. Yeah.
At the same time, there's also a little bit of, which can be good and bad, of don't call it brutal, but brutally honest or directness. And relentless communication, even bluntly, at many points.
Which helps in business, to be honest,
Which can really help to, well, get things done and open doors. It also has sometimes a little bit of a rough edge as well. So, but it's definitely also one of our strategies, as you might call it.
I mean, I would now would like to get your view a bit on the current state of the European, let's say, climate, clean tech environment. Your time goes back to the 90s. My time goes back to the early 2000s. I actually also worked in the photovoltaic industry, not as an engineer, but more as a business person. So in particular, solar, we know things have been coming and going and shifting globally, etc. How would you describe the current environment in terms of, is there enough funding coming in? You are involved in two different venture funds. One thing. Secondly, how is the pipeline? Is it growing? What about the quality of the pipeline? You think there is there still a growth in this, or is there something where we say, well, things are shifting?
In my observation, there's the big thing that's lacking is the exit opportunities for seriously built and grown startup scale-ups, which is working back through the whole chain. So there's still a lot of money and capacity to invest in Series A, Series B investment, but finding an exit path for those investors proves to be really difficult. IPOs, even trade deals, large scale late stage investments from private equity. It's a tough market where things tend to get stuck now. In the past years, when money was still very cheap, a lot of funds have been piled up to be invested in clean tech. So there's for early stage companies, there's still quite some money around. But the funds that do that are active there, there's a bit of increasing nervousness, I would say, because they see how difficult it is to find exit opportunities for themselves, which is their business model eventually.
an exit, you talk not just about getting a successful startup through an IPO, but also just getting them sold to a nice evaluation to corporate strategic partners, etc.
Yeah, yeah, all of that. Yeah, yeah. IPOs are rare in the first place.
Sure.
So I think mostly we depend on financial transactions or trade trade deals, and it's thin.
So to have a realistic view on the performance of, and you don't need to talk about your own VCs here, but maybe in general, how would you see in the long term the likeliness of these very specialized VCs to be successful and maybe also be over averaged? I think, you know, in terms of performance, because I think this was the promise, right, which we all made when we said, well, it makes sense to have this very sector-specific, climate tech, green tech-specific VCs in place, opposed to have this as one of the themes in a bigger VC with so many different topics. You think we can keep this promise to be over average performing? Or did we even make this promise? I'm just thinking about that, right? Because I think the real promise behind these sector-specific VCs was really to have impact.
Yeah.
But obviously, of course, since money is involved, everybody expected a return on investment as well.
I like the question. I think we really needed and have benefited from those themed investors and funds until now. It was really necessary to have those to get where we are today. Because it's still the case that many broad investment, generalistic investors don't understand enough of the business to provide additional value to the founders and the teams on the ground. So, and I think there's still value to be had in having themed clean tech investors that really understand the markets, the dynamics, and can help the executive teams and their boards to navigate this landscape better. At the same time, we see a transition occurring, which has put clean, green in a different role position in comparison to the old-fashioned economics per se. So I do expect that going forward there will be more of a shift towards the use of generalistic money for investment cases that have a business model without any green premium to it. But purely on the basis of a true value proposition that makes sense in the European market, while also bringing green benefits. We really see now the transition from building companies built on premiums to building companies that can really, cut the chase based on a business model that actually creates economic value and green value.
Right. And maybe this is, I think maybe we can view this as well like as a very hard way to start to differentiate and to be very honest around those businesses which rather live only on the green premium and maybe have some business model behind it, but maybe in the long term will not sustain, right? And on the other hand, now we really need to focus on those companies who in the first place really need to build up their case around building a solid return, a sustainable way of growing, and then of course in addition having this green premium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's quite a difficult topic. I think Europe is also in transition to put priorities on playing a role in a global new circumstance or new dynamics, where there's a lot of strategic and economic need for energy independence, materials independence, and strategic independence, which will drive a lot of the clean tech ventures in the right direction, because they actually provide such solutions that fit to a Europe that has more renewable resources for energy than fossil resources, that has the knowledge and the capital to build smart solutions that create a lot of economic efficiency and benefits as well, and a lot of know-how to shape new technologies, the next generation of technologies at the same time.
Do you see potential or even the need that a lot of these funds are getting consolidated so that they get merged?
Might be. I haven't thought a lot about that, to be honest. It's most of the venture capital funds that we see are quite restricted in their design to do anything else than just trying to roll up their portfolios, right? So they don't have freedom in general to strategically align themselves or merge and etc. So we're more dependent, I think, on additional or strengthened funding mechanisms that allow intermediate exits to take place. So there is a lot of money around in Europe. And I think if that money gets to be activated more, it can create growth funds, larger late stage growth funds that allow the current venture capitalists to get exits for their portfolios, which might not be the multiples and multiple generations that we were hoping for, but are decent to be able to make the day and keep their investors, their LPs, sufficiently happy.
Right. Frick, to the end of this conversation, and time is running, both of us, we have a short, hard cut here. I would have loved to go even into more details. Maybe we can continue this at some other point as well. But maybe it's the last observation or question. Both of us are sitting at the jury of the German Energy Agency's SET Award, yeah, which is a global award. So what are you looking forward here for the next round? The next deadline is October 31st. So maybe this is already here. A quick call for everybody to look at that. And when we finish our conversation here, I also have Pia coming in with a short interview with myself. So she will explain everything about the award. But maybe your personal view, how you are looking forward, what kind of applications are you expecting?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm really happy to see that SET Festival is gearing up to their 10th anniversary now. And
both of us has been 10 years in the jury already.
And we have to have been there so long. So makes me feel proud and a little bit old, but it's a great place to be every year to meet up and see what the next generation is providing. And I would expect that and hope that we see even more deep tech startups come forward. Traditionally, or even with the history, it started more with digital solutions that we had to take to jury judgment. But these days, we need more technology to fulfill the rapid transition to energy neutral, climate neutral and fully circular. So that's what I'm hoping for. If I'm speaking around in the Netherlands or wherever I go to promote to every startup founder to apply for the value it generates.
All right. Well, I probably will be around in Amsterdam the next couple of weeks. And if you have the time, let's meet up for a coffee. In the meantime, we will look at the over 400 applications every year, which are coming in for the SET Award. Thank you so much, Frick, for this first insight into the Dutch ecosystem, on your very valuable view on the overall developments. And now let's switch over to Pia, who will give us a bit of more details around the SET Award. Thank you so much, Freek.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Doei.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So I have with me Pia Dorfinger. She is the director of Startup Ecosystem of the German Energy Agency. Hello, Pia, for this very short conversation.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
Under your responsibility, the German Energy Agency has one of the most, let's say, prestigious startup awards. I would probably even say globally on energy, on the energy transition. So it's the SET Award. Can you tell us a bit more about it, why you do it and what is it about?
So SET Award was started 10 years ago, and SET stands for Startup Energy Transition. And we did that because we saw the need to give startups in the energy and climate tech space a global stage and to really shine the spotlight on their innovation, on their technologies, on their solutions, and to connect them with the relevant stakeholders in policy, in the established energy industry, with investors, VCs, corporates. And 10 years ago, I think we were one of the first ones to have this award that really focuses entirely on energy and climate tech.
So, and I even had the pleasure to be part of the jury the last 10 years. And we had the big exercise to go through 4,000 applications. This sounds big, and this is a very big number. A lot of the screening has been done by you guys ahead of the jury, obviously, as well. But can you tell us a bit about maybe one or two very good examples of these applications?
Yeah, we've had over 4,000 applications from over 100 countries. And there's every year we have 15 finalists and 5 winners. So it's really hard to just pick some. But we had a nice story is we had Skeleton Technologies that are in energy storage, who won a few years ago and have since then grown significantly to several hundred employees and have started production here in Germany, actually. And another company, Hyperion Robotics, I thought was very impressive with their sustainable concrete structures, where they use 3D printing technology. And by doing that, it helps to use less material and therefore also less carbon, and applies the circular economy principles.
Great. I mean, you have another application round coming up. So when is the deadline, and why do you think this time startups from the energy sector should apply?
Yes, exactly. The application phase is open right now until the 31st of October. So a bit over 2 weeks to go. The application is really quite short, so it won't take a lot of time to apply, because we want to make sure that it's easy and accessible for startups to apply for it. They can apply in 5 categories. And if you go to the SET Global Innovation homepage, then you will find the link to the application document right there, and you can start straight away. The winners win 10,000 euros. Even if you don't win, or even if you don't make it into the finalists round, we also have the SET 100 list. So every year we publish the top 100 lists, that because we have so many great applications and startups that we really want to give them the opportunity to get a place on the global stage. And we do that through that top 100 list.
Great. So apply. Deadline October 31st. Go to the webpage startup-energy-transition.com of the German Energy Agency. Pia, thank you so much for this short update.
Thank you, David.
Zeit zum Auftauchen. Wir hoffen, dir hat's gefallen. Wenn es so ist, würden wir uns sehr über eine positive Bewertung und ein Abo freuen. Und falls du noch tiefer ins Thema eintauchen möchtest oder Kontakt zu unseren GesprächspartnerInnen suchst, kannst du dich über www.dwr-eco.com ganz einfach bei uns melden. Dieser Podcast wird von DWR Eco produziert, deiner internationalen Cleantech-Beratung für Markt- und Geschäftsstrategien, Politik, PR und Kommunikation.